the main reason behind going with conservative underwriting. So even current market situation, so we need to spread a little bit higher because of, you know, interest rates are going up. So that definitely another factor, it impact, you know, exit cap rate. So that is the reason we are right now, we are even spreading more than 10 BPS for exit cap rate. Yeah, and also we are doing different kind of stress tests. Mainly we are, is that exit cap rate also different from each and city. So every market, it is different.
Hello, hello. My name is Abel Pacheco, and you're listening to the Five Talents Podcast, how to build wealth like the 1%. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast, how to build wealth like the 1%. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I'm the principal of Five Talents Capital. We're a San Antonio, Texas real estate investment firm, and we're actively invested in 1,500 doors of commercial real estate worth $150 million, much of which is right here in San Antonio, Texas, the Alamo City, baby. I'm also a fund manager, a capital allocator, and a servant leader who learned how to invest like the 1%. And on the Five Talents Podcast, I enjoy helping others learn and doing the same. So if you're seeking investment strategies to catapult your family wealth and generate passive income, even in today's volatile market, this show is for you. Because each week we're bringing you interviews with PE firms, investment advisors, financial planners, tax strategists, VC funds, and many others who are highly skilled in handling money, good stewards of capital, and individuals who advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So each show, we're going to provide you insights and actionable steps that you can implement to become a better investor. You're always going to learn something that you can apply in your own investment journey on the Five Talents Podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. All right. Hello, hello. This is Abel Pacheco, your host for the Five Talents Podcast. We are super excited today, as always, get to talk to an amazing individual, Mr. Rama. Rama, man, I'm very thankful that you got to join and, you know, thankful you got to join us. So first of all, how's it going?
Yeah, going well, Bill. Thank you very much for, you know, this opportunity for that. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. For those of you that don't know, Mr. Ramakrishna is the founder of Usha Investment Group. And really, Rama's, you know, come from a background in multifamily and real estate and investing in the syndication world because he's an equity partner in about 750 units of multifamily. So a lot of doors in multiple different markets to Florida, Maryland, North Carolina. And he's a general partner in a number of units as well. So about 64 doors. So he's got 15 years background, which I'm excited to talk about too, in the IT world. So for those of you that are in that space, he's been on the software side for a number of years, and I'm excited there because if you heard me, I worked at Rackspace for about 10 years, another 3 years at a hosting company. So I was on the hardware side and Rama's on the software side. So anyways, I'm excited, you know, just to hear a little bit more about his story. And really, he's got a good amount of experience analyzing deals, underwriting, you know, even some of the capital side and the asset management side. So we're going to have a great conversation. And Rama, thank you very much for joining. So in your own words, brother, please tell me who you are, what you do, and let's start a great conversation there.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for the introduction. So basically, I came from India. So originally from India and came to US in 2007, around 2007 time. So as IT professional, so I worked in IT side around 15 years and around 2014-15 time frame. So because of my friends, I'm introduced to real estate. So that's how I get into real estate. So initially I invested in the single families, town homes in North Carolina. I invested in a few deals. So working full time in IT side and also managing these properties to be challenging. So that's how I'm introduced to, you know, multifamily space. So I did explore, you know, learning multifamily through bigger pockets or, you know, podcasts, listening podcasts or reading books and also through various mastermind groups. That's how I started and initially invested in a couple of deals to get track record, you know, from multifamily space. So invested a couple of deals as LP, then switched towards the GP side. And so far we closed 64 units deals in North Carolina market. So that's how I started. I also run podcasts called Multifamily AP360 and also organize conference Multifamily AP360.
All right. Multifamily AP360. Mr. Rama the man. Man, so I'm excited, brother. I've seen you around a number of the social medias, a podcast, the virtual events. And, you know, it's exciting to hear somebody like yourself, you know, coming in from another country, from the US. It gives me a lot of inspiration, a lot of motivation. Like, man, I was from Texas, you know, from the US here, and our family, you know, has a background, foreigners moving in, and just, you know, just kind of really seeing the inspiration that is the quote unquote American dream to be able to come in 2007 from India, work a number of years in IT. And then, man, now you're an owner. Now you're a part owner in a lot of doors and a lot of real estate. Man, that's inspiring, brother. It's inspiring.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, so let me back up for a minute because I definitely want to talk about real estate. But what intrigues me a lot is just, you know, mindsets, paradigm shifts, how people actually move forward. Mindset's such a big reason why some people have success in real estate or ventures or new entrepreneurship, you know, ventures, and why others just never get started, right? It's the action that inspires others to make a move. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your background. Were your family members, your dad, mom, how did you grow up? Was it, I was always going to be an entrepreneur, or was it your parents that way? Tell me a little bit about, you know, your background, just so we can get a good understanding, man.
Sure. So came from a small family, like mainly like agricultural family. So my father was, you know, farmer, so mainly into, you know, agriculture side. So my mother is a housewife, you know, kind of stuff. So born and brought up in a small city in South in India, and also studied there like up to engineering. So basically we don't have track record of, you know, business side. So I'm the first person, you know.
You're from the first one.
Yeah, from education point of, you know, so higher studies like engineering. So that's how my background. Yeah.
Oh man. And you know, even just taking a leap. So from a farmer to an engineer, that's a big one. From India to the US, like what was it that spurred the action to say, you know what, I'm going to move to the US? How did that even happen, man?
Yeah. So during my college studies, during engineering side, like lots of my college mates and classmates, they also came to US. So that's how I got that, you know, inspiration. And, you know, that's how I came to US. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's great, man. Seeing other people and just kind of, hey, they can do it, we can do it type of thing.
Correct. Yep.
All right. And an engineer for a number of years. So what did you do in software? Were you a designer or coder? And when you say engineer, for those that don't know the IT space, like what the heck did you do? What did you have to learn and what did you do?
Yeah, IT side. So I did engineering and mechanical engineering. So then I switched towards IT side. So mainly IT side, I was into quality side. Quality lead and quality manager, you know, quality aspects of the software, you know, software projects and products.
Makes perfect sense, man. So what in the world caused the jump or a leap from IT into real estate? How did that even happen? How did that occur?
So mainly like, you know, always want to do business, even, you know, during the IT side also. So I always try to explore multiple options, but I didn't get luck or success into other aspects. You know, I wanted to do MBA, those kind of stuff. But, you know, somehow I introduced to real estate through my common friend, I mean, college classmate. So that's how I got interested and I started investing into real estate. So I got some success there, instantly into single family side. So investing in multiple deals and some success, and, you know, because of busyness and, you know, multiple deals, managing multiple deals across multiple locations, bit challenging. So then, you know, I thought of, you know, exploring different options. So that's how I came across multifamily space. So I explored that and, you know, I learned a lot about multifamily. So there are so many commercial asset classes, but I attracted towards multifamily because of, you know, always demand will be there. So everyone needs a roof and, you know, so multifamily is the best asset class for that, you know. So that's how I identified multifamily.
All right, man. So your very first deal, was it your own money? Did you partner with someone? How did you find the deal? What was the very first transaction that you did?
Is that from single family or multifamily?
Yeah.
A single family I did myself. Is all single families as I invested my own money. So mainly like I found through some, you know, news had in local market. That's how I identified that home is maybe some bad location, price also very low. And also I invested in some good location, town home style. Yeah.
Okay. Very, very good. An old ad, man. What year was that?
Say around 2014, 15.
Okay. Very good. Well, yeah. So you did a number of transactions, it sounds like, you know, diversification, rough neighborhood, probably fixer upper, and then maybe nicer side of town, nicer townhome. So how many houses, single family houses, did you kind of invest in before you made a jump to becoming a limited partner, passive investor in multifamily?
So around seven, eight single families and townhomes, I can say.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. We were similar, about 7-8 houses. And then we're like, man, it became a little bit of work. What was the aha moment? What was the big pivot or the jump to say, you know what, I've got to go to multifamily?
So mainly like, you know, a lot of, you know, phone calls or a lot of issues with, you know, property management or, you know, or reselling the property. So that really, you know, frustrated me a little bit more. No, this enough, you know, now I need to switch towards, you know, some other aspects where I can manage a bit easily, you know. That's how I introduced to multifamily.
There you go. Well, okay, man. So let's fast forward. So now you're in commercial real estate. You've done a number of deals and transactions. You've invested passively. Now you're putting on, you know, commercial real estate events, virtual summits. You're a podcast host. You know, walk us through a little bit of how does that happen? How did you jump from here to there?
Yeah. So from multifamily side, I always want to work on GP side only. My goal was always, you know, active investor. So, but like, you know, to build that track record, you know, so I started with, you know, passive side. I did like in underwrite a lot of deals and submitted and did a lot of property tours, but I didn't get success. So during that time, I invested passively and also, you know, and also keep looking for active side also, you know, and also join various mastermind groups and learn and partner with other active investors in this space. So like around 2011, so 2021, we were awarded with one deal, GP side. And it took around 4 to 6 months to close the deal. So mainly I'm into acquisition side, underwrite the deal and analyze the deal and, you know, did the proper due diligence and property tours, those kind of stuff. And also raise a little bit capital. Right now I'm participating in asset management of this deal.
All right. Well, hey, man, congratulations. Congratulations on the run, Rama.
Thank you.
That sounds awesome, brother. All the success that you've had personally, professionally, now, you know, in the commercial side, in the commercial arena, and really putting on the efforts to get bigger exposure. I'm excited for the future, man. I'm excited for everything that you're doing.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm also excited. So a lot of, you know, potential is in multifamily space. So that's how I jumped into this space. And also started podcasting. So networking, cool. It will help me networking with a lot of experienced operators like you in this space. So, yeah. And conference also definitely helping me to reach out more number of, you know, experienced operators and building that networking opportunities.
Very good, brother. Very good. Well, let's dive into some learning for those that are, you know, really listening to the show. We want to, you know, first thank a couple of our sponsors. We've got some really great folks over at Anderson Advisors that have helped us for a lot of years. When we were single family investors, we leaned on them for legal, for tax and risk advice. And now, even then, I just want to thank them very much for being some of the greatest sponsors that we've had that have actually done real estate. But for the educational side, for those that are trying to figure out, hey, look, I want to be a passive investor. Maybe you're an entrepreneur, maybe you're a business owner, and you're trying to figure out how to invest in real estate without having extra work, having extra time, effort, and energy. You want a little bit of, you know, the underwriting nuggets. You want some analysis insight on how to better evaluate, underwrite, and do the analysis on your deal so you know what to be invested in. If you are an active participant in deals, you want to understand what are the current trends in underwriting and analysis. So, you know, let's pivot or move a little bit, Rama, to help others, you know, understand that. So let's talk about underwriting. At a high level, you know, underwriting, we're looking at the financial analysis of these apartment buildings or commercial properties. They're more than just single family houses. You have income minus expenses. And at the end of that, you have a debt service payment below the line. Above the line are all the expenses, everything that it takes to run the apartment building, your payroll, your staff, your marketing, your contract services, all of these lines that go into your expenses. And you're trying to figure out, well, what's my potential rent if I fully rented it out and I'm going to have a little bit of vacancy and I got to factor this stuff in when I make an offer on a property. And that's what underwriting is. It's our financial analysis on whether or not we pay the asking price, below asking price, or are we paying a market premium, or do we want it at a discount? And then we're trying to factor in, man, what's our goal, our execution plan for the future to have a big exit, right? So that's what our underwriting, our financial analysis is. So when we talked to Rama earlier, he goes, yeah, I like the underwriting. I like the analysis. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. So what, Rama, in your own words, like, what is underwriting? What's financial analysis? You know, maybe let's start here.
Sure. Mainly, like, to find the value of the property, we need to do, you know, underwriting. So that's how you find the value of the particular property, right? So we have like underwriting models, different underwriting models. So we do get, you know, T12 and rent rolls from the brokers. So based on that, you know, we'll find out how much average rents for different units, one bedroom or two bedroom, something like that. And also from T12, we'll get all kinds of incomes, total incomes, other incomes, all the stuff, and also different kinds of expenses. So based on that, so we'll underwrite. So we'll plug in all the rents, like what is current average rents and what are the projected rents, you know, after with renovations, without renovations, based on our business plan. And also we'll plug in all the income, like, you know, so gross income and other income, last two leases and, you know, other bonuses or any kind of, you know, losses, all stuff we'll include on income side and expense side. Like you mentioned, all the expenses like marketing, contract services, advertising, admin side and payroll, T2 payroll and, you know, repairs and maintenance, turnovers, all those stuff we plug in. And also we include like what is purchase price from the broker. We'll get from brokers, you know, cap rate and purchase price. So we'll plug in those numbers. And some other factors like, you know, exit cap rate. So based on, we'll get going in cap rate from the brokers based on that market. So we'll plug in exit cap rate. So we'll expand like each year 10 BPS points. Like if you're going with, you know, 5 years. So our exit cap will be always, you know, 50 BPS points than current going in cap rate. That's how we underwrite. And also like we'll go with, you know, different rent escalators, how much we're projecting each year, how much rent escalating each year, and how much expenses we are adding for each year. That also we plug in. And also mainly we'll get insurance quote from the broker and real estate tax also we'll check with tax assessor of that particular county, when exactly it will be reassessed, how much it will be. So the stuff we plug in. After putting all this stuff, we'll get final value or final results, like how much cash and cash it will generate and how much IRR it will generate, how much AR generate. So we'll do different kinds of permutations, combinations like 3 years exit, 5 years exit, agency debts, bridge debt with a different interest rates, like, you know, LTVs, also different LTVs. If you go with bridge loans, we'll go with, you know, 70 LTV, and also most of the times we'll get CapEx budget also with bridge loans. If you go with agency debt, so normally LTV will be a bit lower. So current markets, we are underwriting around 60 LTV, 55 to 60 LTV. And also sometimes we'll get, you know, just only periods like 3 years, 2 years, those kind of stuff. Normally we'll get these quotes from the, you know, lender based on their inputs. We'll plug in those numbers here. So we'll do all these combinations and, you know, then we'll get final results.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Five Talents Podcast with me, your host, Abel Pacheco. And since you're listening to the show right now, I wanted to break for a moment to tell you thank you so much for subscribing and following the show. I also want to give you access to our Simple Wealth case study for busy professionals that we explain how we invested in $150 million of commercial real estate to generate passive income. So I'm sharing with you how I personally build wealth like the 1% and explaining how you can create passive income in real estate without having to manage it yourself. So do yourself a favor, take a moment now and go to www.5talents.capital. That's the number 5talents, TALENTS.capital. And you can register, watch our video recorded case study, and we're going to give you access to our investment club as well. If you want to see like all of our next moves, every single investment move that we make, future investment opportunities, and even perhaps invest alongside us, go to our website now. We look forward to sharing more. You can register at www.5talents.capital. And we look forward to having you as part of the club. All right. Look at that. Look, there's a number of things that we're gonna go and try to unpack a little bit of this. But man, Rama was one of those individuals that, you know, when I heard mechanical engineer, right, to start, and then a developer on the software side, when you put those things together, a formulaic kind of mindset, 1 + 1 = 2 times 3 is A, B, C, X, Y, Z. Here are all the inputs. I go left to right. And when you look at financial underwriting of a business like multifamily, you start to realize, oh, okay, I see some similarities. I see some patterns. I can see the profit and loss. And while it's a bit complex, the more that you do it, the easier it becomes time and time again. So as a passive investor, you're trusting an operator, a syndicator, your investment team that they're doing the underwriting. But it's good to know. It's like, this is the basic principles on whether or not we're going to invest in this deal based on this underwriting, based on this analysis, based on this financial outcome. So thanks, Rama. So you mentioned a couple of things. We're going to kind of go back and talk about a couple of the points that Rama mentioned, right? So average rents, your assumptions that we're making, the premiums that we think we can get, our loss to lease, all of those things kind of incorporate all of the renters that are there today, what they're paying $1,000. If you have a loss to lease, that is, you know that you can rent it today for $1,100, but you're stuck in a lease with a previous renter at $1,000. So you've got a loss to lease and you're trying to burn that number off, especially with other renters, maybe the market premiums that other competitors are getting, maybe down the street, they're getting $1,200 a door. So you're trying to figure out how to turn those rents as quickly as possible. And now, Rama, that you've been in the business a little bit longer and you're looking at this, what are some of the areas that you get these data points? Like, how do you even validate, in your area, what my current rent is, what the average rent is, what the premiums, what people are getting, and then how I could, potentially do better? How do you get those data points and something simple for the passive investors and, to boil it down to?
Sure. There are multiple ways you will get, average market rents in that current market, So you can get it from the local property manager, property management. That is one way. So if you're using apartments.com, you can get, so if you search with that particular property, you will get, around that property. So you will get market demand for, other assets near to that property. That is other way. And also you can use, some paid subscriptions like Coast ERD. So using those subscriptions also, you will get, average market rents in this market. Another tool is like Rentometer or something. You can use that one to get market rents. So mainly like for that particular sub-market. So thing is like, you can reach out those other competitive properties and ask them, what is their rents for one bedrooms and two bedrooms or similar size of property, similar kind of units that your target property. So that's how I will get proper average market rents.
Yeah, very good. Some of the tools that we're using for rents today when I'm trying to figure out, hey, what do I think I can rent out these units today for? What will they be able to be rented for next year and the year after are some of the same data sources, right? So CoStar, trying to figure out what's my annual rent growth and what's this particular submarket in this zip code going to be able to be rented for in the future. And then apartments.com is a good and easy way to, you know, you check some data, you can look at it online and you see what they have available and what unit mix and how much the rents are going for. But I was coaching our underwriter on our side too. I was like, and don't forget to pick up the phone and call some of the property managers that are on site, because you never know, somebody's got some kind of special or somebody's got kind of some deal. And now, you know, your competitors are charging the same $1,000, but they're doing the first month's rent for free. Now that's your competitor. Or potentially their one bedrooms are super high price, so they're twos, but if they're 99% occupied, they only have one door available, one unit, then, you know, on that point, it's like, eh, that's not really going to be a great competitor because there's only one unit. I'm trying to fill up the next 10 or 15 or 20. So, you know, there's different things to weigh out, and they're all great ways to look at, beat up, scrutinize, stress test your own assumptions and your own underwriting. So
yep.
All the things to look at, right? Okay, so you mentioned a couple of other things, Rama. I'd love to hear, you know, a little bit more about, like you mentioned cash on cash, a return, entry cap, exit cap. So for those investors that are looking at, you know, that even one thing that Rama mentioned, entry cap versus an exit cap, and he puts in 10 bips a year, roughly speaking. You know, I'm sure every deal is a little different, but 10 bips a year, 10 basis points of a spread between the time he bought it, every year that he plans to own it, has a certain spread, so that he doesn't go in assuming that just because he bought it today, it's going to be a higher value tomorrow. He's saying, I bought it here today, $10 million, but I'm going to assume that it may be worth less at a higher cap rate. So he's kind of doing that assumption and stress test on his own. But why don't you elaborate a little bit more on, you know, how those assumptions affect underwriting a little bit, Rama?
Yeah, definitely. So main reason behind going with this kind of underwriting is we want to go with, you know, conservative underwriting. So we want to assume, you know, things may go worse, you know. So mainly to cover up any kind of unforeseen situations or unforeseen market conditions. So that is the main reason behind going with conservative underwriting. So even current market situation, so we need to spread a little bit higher because of, you know, interest rates are going up. So that definitely another factor, it will impact, you know, exit cap rate. So that is the reason we are right now, we are even spreading more than 10 BPS for exit cap rate. Yeah, and also we are doing a different kind of stress test. Mainly we are, is that exit cap rate also different from each and city. So every market, it is different. So if it is Greensboro, its exit cap rate is, or going in cap rate is different. And also Raleigh, Charlotte, or Greenville markets. So those are the things we need to consider.
Yep. Yet there's a conservative, we're trying to put our assumptions, and maybe not, I'm not sure if you mentioned the actual word, but as you were talking, I'm thinking stress test, right? We're trying to basically push our financial modeling to some limits and saying, what happens if 3 years ago, our stress tests had number of renters? What happens if our occupancy goes from 97, 96, 95 to 80 to 75? And we're saying, whoa, what happens if we lose renters? 3 years ago, stress testing versus stress testing today, it's how high are my interest rates going to go up, right? I still care about occupancy, but man, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, my underwriting is a different stress test. And now it's, well, what happened if the lender only gives us 60% LTV at a 8% interest rate? And, you know, the Federal Reserve, you know, the Fed is still moving up interest rates as we speak. We record this show January the 30th, 2023. So the Fed's about to meet again. And sure as the sky is blue, we're assuming another hike, right? So those are the stress tests, right? The more you have that, the more you can prepare for it, you can at least say, you know, we've looked at it and we know we can, you know, foresee the rough unforeseen, right? Those circumstances there.
So, yeah, definitely. I want to add a couple of other points.
Please, like, please, Rama.
Yeah, definitely. Rent growth projections also, you know, sometimes we'll project with 3% growth. How it will work if you project rent growth is only 2%, you know? And also occupancy that you also touched. If your occupancy is 95%, how it is performed? How are the return? If its occupancy is only 90%, how are the returns, you know? Same way, like, you know, exit cap rates. If exit cap is 6%, what are the returns? If it's exit cap is 5.5, or the returns, you know, 5.75 or the returns, something like that be on the road, you know. I just want to add these points also.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. Another point is like, what the heck is happening to interest rates? I have investors, you know, every single day asking me, well, what do you think is going to happen? And I'm like, I have no idea. If I had a crystal ball, I promise you that I'd be leveraging it to the full and tell everyone know exactly what I think is going to happen. And we'd be raising $100 million because we're going to turn it into two. And, you know, the frank and honest, you know, opinion of mine is like, I lean towards other sources of information that are more knowledgeable, looking at more historical records, looking at more data points. Easy one that I look at, you know, for you, if you're following interest rates, Chatham and Pensford, and they have forward looking curves and they're trying to sell insurance as a rate cap to this interest rate, but they are heavily attuned to data and they have interest rates going up all the way till June, July of 2023. So for the next 6 or 7 months, and then a pivot is not necessarily going to be a sharp drop in rates, but rather the pivot will be no more change, maybe flat. Interest rates are going to stay high, but remain flat for another year before they start to make a pivot, maybe going down. So, you know, for the next year, year and a half, we're trying to figure out what kind of deals can we get at higher interest rates? Know they're going to stay high. Know they're going to be in this upper area of interest rates for the time being. And, you know, just got to maneuver around it. So that's what we're seeing. And I'd love to hear your take on it as well.
I totally agree with all your points. I'm also maybe getting same kind of resources. So I'm also agree with a lot of points you mentioned, like next 2 quarters, it may go up, interest rates may go up. Maybe after like third quarter onwards, it may go down, like not sharp, as you mentioned. It may go down maybe 25 BPS down like that. It may go on each quarter, 25 BPS. That's how I'm getting news. And so, yeah.
That's what Rama's crystal ball says. So wish we knew for sure. And, you know, this is part of the risk though, right? Like where some investors, you know, I guess part of the risk is you have to take the risk. If you don't take the risk, the outcome is certain. Inflation is eating up our money. If you're sitting on $1 million cash and it's in a bank account, inflationary, you know, period of time that we're in, minimum 8 to 9% is what people are forecasting that our spending power is reducing every single year. So it's just getting eaten up, eaten up, eaten up. So whether you think you're not risking it, you already made a decision. And that decision is I'm okay with 8 to 9% loss every single year, right? So we've got to muster up some courage, some foresight, some, you know, knowledge to say, look, I've got to take a risk because if I don't take a risk, I'm going to lose already. So the aversion is the aversion to loss. Most people would rather avoid a loss, even if the chance or the risk is a little bit better to win. And so we've got to muscle through that loss aversion to try to say, okay, how do I make this money work for us, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, on that, you know, what are the mindsets do you come across? Maybe some of your investors or you that you've had to work through some of the mindsets to push forward and say, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep investing.
Yeah. So from my point of view, I will keep looking for, you know, deals. So I will underwrite more conservatively, taking all the points we mentioned so far, like it will go interest rate, higher interest rates, and, you know, not much rent growth, maybe this year or next year. That's how I underwrite and keep looking for right deals. If that meets only my criteria, then I will proceed with next steps like submitting LOIs and proceed with, you know, acquisition side. So underwriting conservatively and, you know, still actively looking for deals, you know, building that relationship with the brokers and, you know, reaching out more brokers in these markets. From investors' point of view, I do see there is a decrease in interest in last maybe 3 months, something like that. So main thing is up to them. So if they're interested, if they find good opportunities, they can still not take that risk, you know?
Yeah. You got to stay sharp. You got to keep looking at deals. You got to keep underwriting. You got to keep talking to brokers. You got to keep seeing what's out there in the market. If you're not in the market and you're not looking and you're not, you know, grinding it, then you really don't know when things change. You're not going to know. You're not going to be able to sense it. And if you wait it out, quote unquote, wait it out, I don't mean the difference between moving forward or not, but I mean waiting it out. Like, I'm not going to underwrite anything. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm not going to even look at deals. Well, then you really don't get a sense of, you know, when the tide starts to turn, right? So you have to be, you know, out there. You have to be looking at deals. I agree. And, you know, you got to stay warm. You got to stay warmed up, right?
Yeah. You have to be active. Yep.
Yes, sir. Well, Rama, it's been amazing talking, and I really appreciate it. I think a few listeners got a little bit of education today on some analysis and underwriting, so I appreciate it. When's your next summit? You know, maybe you can tell us some dates and get us some links, and where should our listener base go to? And, you know, maybe any affiliate links or whatever you have, just have to share that with our listener base.
Yeah, absolutely. Great conversations around underwriting analysis. Thank you for that. And so mainly, like, I'm organizing this multifamily AP360 virtual conference. It's coming up on February 17, 18, 19. So mainly we are focusing on mindset, passive investing, active investing, and also behind multifamily, few other asset classes also. So they can register going through multifamilyap360.com. And if they use AP15, they will get some 15% additional discount.
All right. There you go. There you go. And Rama, who should be attending the event? And, you know, what kind of mindset should they be in to say, you know, I should be attending. I need to go to that.
Yeah, anyone related with real estate, so who want to invest actively or passively, they can attend this virtual conference. New investors or experienced investors, so they can always, you know, learn new stuff from these experienced operators. And also, you have opportunity to network with, you know, other hundreds of active and passive investors. So that's how they can benefit.
My man. All right, Rama. Hey, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Really appreciate it. The last note before we go, right, or the last question, is there anything we didn't get to talk about today that you really wanted to bring up? Something I didn't ask about and you were just excited to share, just, you know, wanted to give you, you know, the last few minutes, if there's anything else, any words of wisdom or last nuggets here.
So definitely, you know, identify your strong strengths, your unique ability, and focus on that. And also identify, like, complementary skill set persons and leverage their skill set and build, you know, your team and grow in multifamily space.
Get it on. Well, Rama, I really appreciate your time. Sincerely appreciate it, brother. And I wish you nothing but success, and God bless you and everything that you're doing. And thank you very much for joining. Appreciate it.
Thank you much. Likewise, and good luck with you also, Abel. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. To our sponsors over at Anderson, we just want to say thank you very much. If you are looking for some links, go to the show notes. They will direct you towards some free packages they always have. So we want to say thank you very much. A big supporter of theirs. I've used them for years, so I highly trust them. And for our Five Talents podcast listeners and subscribers, thank you very much for all you do. If you heard something that was valuable today, go to our podcast, like, subscribe, and leave us a written review that make more impact than you know. And I look forward to sharing, and I'll see you at the next show. See ya. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Five Talents podcast with myself, your host, Abel Pacheco. We really appreciate you liking, following, subscribing, and leaving all the written reviews for the Five Talents podcast. Each week, we're going to continue to bring interviews with private equity folks, VCs, advisors, financial planners, strategists, tax strategists, and other stewards of capital, many of which advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So we appreciate you joining. Also, if you want to be notified of monthly future events we're hosting or attending, and if you want exclusive access to the same investment opportunities that have largely been reserved for the wealthiest 1%, many of which you've rarely ever heard about, go now to our website, watch our wealth building case study, and register to be added to our investment club. We're going to send you future opportunities, and you'll be able to watch all the moves that we make firsthand. Your investment journey is waiting for you to take the next step. So what is the next step? Go to www.5talents.capital. That's 5talents.capital, and register today. Thank you again. We can't wait to bring you the next show. And thank you for liking and subscribing.